My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of a community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at EmbarkSustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at EmbarkSustain.
Well, welcome back to Call Me Negotiator, and this is your host, Charlotte. Today we have our guest, Queen. Just to right dive into the point, Queen, could you introduce a little bit about yourself, like what you're working on, your passion is? I know we talk a little bit about your research, which I found is very interesting, but I'm not able to really describe it as comprehensive as you could. So please.
Yeah, sure. Like you said, my name is Quinn. I am a master's student here at Simon Fraser University. I'm in the psychology program. In that program, there's a bunch of different like streams of specialization. So I'm in the historical, quantitative, and theoretical stream, but basically I just focus on research methods and statistics. My research is on gender and sex measurement and data use in the social and health sciences pretty broadly. So I'm especially interested in how to incorporate gender and sex data that are from gender or sex diverse populations, so people who are trans, non-binary, intersex. Basically how we can best collect that data and then use it for analysis, because a lot of the practices right now are not really doing a great job of that, in my opinion, anyways. Other than that, I did my undergrad here at SFU in behavioral neuroscience. So I've been here for a hot minute. I'm from Calgary, Alberta, is where I was born and raised. So I moved out here when I started university.
Right.
Otherwise, I spend a lot of time. I have a cat at home. I play rugby. But most of my time, honestly, is spent either being a TA or doing, like, schoolwork, basically.
So basically, most of your time are dedicated into this research topic. I do research as well, so I kind of know the process. It's more complicated than I imagined before I did this, because before I was like, oh, you just do something and write a paper about it, or not. But then I realized that if you really wanted to do a good job and if you're really serious about this, then you kind of find the problem after exploring a lot about this field and then decide what kind of problem that you or worth for you to study on. Mm-hmm. So for your topic, seems like there's a two points that caught your attention. One is this research field. Maybe there is something that's related to your background in behavior science. And another one is the cure. Do I pronounce it right?
Queer.
Okay. The queer community.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
So how did you get into these two parts and decide, okay, this is the community that I wanted to work for,
right,
and this is the topic that I wanted to dedicate it in?
Right. Yeah. I mean, actually, there's like a very specific way that I came into the work that I did. So just to start at the very beginning, I came to SFU to do neuroscience, mm-hmm, because I was kind of split on whether I really wanted to do psychology, but everything other than psychology I wanted to do was in the sciences.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured if I do neuroscience, then I get half my degree is psychology. So I can do that later, but I can also have a science degree. So if I want to switch to like medical sciences or something like that, I would have that option. So that's what got me in to doing my degree in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Through my degree, I did the most random kind of stuff in terms of research that I was involved in. I started getting involved like right away, right at the beginning, as soon as I could, basically, in my degree. I started in 2020. So there wasn't a ton of opportunities for that first year because I was staying at home. But after that, I was working in labs doing research on eating disorders. I did a bunch of work with like dementia and health research for like cognition and sleep in older adults. My honors thesis and my undergrad was on religious cognition.
Mm.
So like all over the place. But what led me to my actual research topic that I am now pursuing as a graduate student is actually, it started in my undergrad. I was in a course in spring of 2024.
Mm-hmm.
It was called psychopharmacology, which is a really neat course. It's basically how different like drugs and medications interact with the brain. So super interesting course. But during that class, we were talking about alcohol use, and the guidelines for alcohol use are split by sex. So like the number of drinks you can like have safely is based off of your sex, so male, female.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
I really wanted to expand this topic, but then keep going. We can talk about this. We have to talk about this
later. Of course. Yeah. So that's just kind of like safe alcohol use guidelines.
Mm.
But I'm trans myself. And I've taken, like, I've done medical transition and things. So, like, for example, taking testosterone, stuff like that.
Mm.
So that made me wonder. I was, I think, about a year into taking testosterone when I was in this class. And I was like, well, like, just thinking for myself, what alcohol use guidelines do I follow?
Oh, yeah.
Because, like obviously, like, I'm assigned female at birth. So that's, like, what I would probably be told to use, but at the same time my body is not that of a typical female. So I was like, I asked the prof that. Obviously she didn't know, because like that's kind of an out there question to be asking. She was very nice and stuff, that's not, it wasn't like bad, but just unknown. And then I was doing my own research on the topic later, because I was just curious, and I found out that turns out nobody knows, because we don't know why that difference exists in the first place. Like, we know there's like differences between like enzyme activity and all this stuff between males and females, but we don't know why, and we don't know how like taking hormones, for example, impacts that. So I was like, okay, well, I wonder what else we don't know about like sex differences that have been observed in research. And it turns out a lot. I was in another course that term, and it was very open. It's just like write an argumentative paper about anything in psychology. So I dove super deep into that topic, and I was looking at all the like research that exists in psychology, in particular in that case, on like gender, sex differences, how hormones play an impact, how genes play an impact, all this stuff. And there was just so much we don't know. And without knowing that stuff, it makes it really difficult to extend anything beyond like very strict boxes of man, woman, male, female.
Right.
And like that's not even to go into like the ethics of it, with data from people who are trans or non-binary being thrown out and just being like systematically excluded from research, basically. So that like really got me thinking about it. The next year I was just doing like my honors, so didn't really do much about it, but came back up with my supervisor that I ended up going with for grad school. Mm-hmm. And I was so passionate about that topic that it was the easiest thing for me to just like jump right into. It's so much easier to like have a good time in grad school if you actually like what you're interested or what you're researching.
Right. So what is your supervisor or the lab's main field? What do they mainly focus on that you decided this is where I wanted to continue this research on?
Right. Yeah. So my lab is called the Measurement and Modeling Lab. So essentially it's focused on, it's very broad, but how things are measured. Sounds kind of like really vague, but if you think about in psychology and in a lot of health science as well, you're not like measuring things that you can see right in front of you that like physically exist, right? Like it's not like you're measuring like how much a plant grows or like some specific like thermal output from a reaction, like mm-hmm. in the more physical sciences. Like you're trying to measure happiness, you're trying to measure well-being. So obviously there's a lot of, that goes into having to measure those things because they're not things that physically exist, they're constructs.
Right.
So we look a lot at like how surveys perform in different populations and like I know people have done like concussion measurement work, and it's a very broad lab, but that's kind of what I liked about it because you can kind of go where you want, and there's a big equity focus to our lab. So especially doing research to serve groups who have been marginalized or underserved in the past. So that's kind of what made me go with that.
Yeah, I mean, like, actually, I thought your story would go like because they don't have this alcohol thing, or how it just kind of different kind of chemistry mm-hmm. Would affect our bodies and brains in terms of a different sex. And so I'm just going to go to this lab and measure or do some research about how to measure it.
Yeah, and that's like...
Or it could be.
Yeah, it could be. I guess like that's one place I could look in the future.
Right.
But it just like, to me, it just kind of like was the catalyst for like realizing a much bigger issue at play.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's a big topic to tackle. So like right now, I'm just working on getting ethics approval to do my research, but I'm interested in doing interviews to start, at least for my master's, with gender and sex diverse people who've participated in studies,
mm-hmm.
Asking about their experiences with that. So, you know, like how they go about choosing studies to join based off of recruitment criteria, especially when those recruitment criteria are mentioning sex or gender, how they answer demographic questions that ask about gender or sex, any experiences they've had in studies that have been good, not so good, what made them that way. I'm also that's one leg of like my interview study. The other leg is talking to researchers who collect gender and sex data,
mm-hmm.
And asking them why they kind of make the decisions that they do with that. So why do they ask gender and not sex, or vice versa? Why do they provide the options that they do there? Why do they narrow their recruitment criteria to a specific gender?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just interested in understanding why they make those choices. Same with data analysis, why they split groups the way they do, who they put in what group.
Right.
Because I think I need to understand those two things from the eyes of the people who are there before I can start trying to come up with solutions to the measurement issues that we're having.
Yeah, I found this very fascinating because I consider myself more of a pragmatic person. So the research topics that I do is in AI-human interaction area.
Yeah.
But like, you can also study a possible, like, kind of fake topic. Or you can choose some like a real problem that people are facing in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm towards to the later one. And the topic that you study, I actually thought it was just, you know, from the... queer community, they talk about it, or maybe you find it's kind of interesting that's related to your identity so that you studied it. But from what you just talked about, it's actually from your real life experience, real confusions, means a lot of other people would relate to it and they experience that. But the interesting thing is because it's such a niche professional area where most of us wouldn't even think about that, we needed to know this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally. Like, it obviously comes from, like, the reason that I got into this in the first place was because of my own identity.
Yeah.
But, like, as soon as I started looking into it more, I realized it was so widespread and it really does affect everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I always give this this example to people when I'm explaining my research to them, especially people who aren't members of the queer community.
Mm-hmm.
Research that doesn't like spend a good deal of time thinking about how it measures gender and sex doesn't mm-hmm. serve anybody. It doesn't matter who you are.
Mm-hmm.
The example I always give is, for example, people who are in menopause, right? So menopause, your hormones change, basically. Like, your hormone levels are different once people reach menopause because ovaries don't work anymore, basically.
What does menopause mean?
So menopause is when, basically, like, the ovaries stop producing estrogen and progesterone, typically in, like, older females.
Oh, okay.
Is it just like a natural part of aging? Similar thing in males with andropause, tends to be a decrease in testosterone, which
right.
is like the male hormone, big quote, air quotes there.
Right. I got it. Because English is not my native language. Therefore, sometimes there's something that's just a little bit, it's not necessarily professional, but when we use it less in our daily lives,
right, for
then
sure.
I get confused or I don't understand. But then in terms of the way to understand it deeper and also to be dedicating to the topic, I always wanted to really understand it, but then you just give me a very professional angle to explain this.
Yeah.
That was like out of my expectation. So I wonder, like, when you get those topics studied,
yeah,
since you said you start the interviews with other people, like from the queer communities, mm-hmm. or do you also talk with people who identify themselves just as the sex that they're born with?
Right. So first of all, I'm still needing to get ethics approval to continue the interview. So I haven't done more yet, but I did take a qualitative research methods class this past spring.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I had conditional ethics approval to do some interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So I did those all with gender or sex diverse participants.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that I'm narrowing and focusing on that population in particular is because they're the group that is going to see the holes in the current research practices.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're the ones who are going to struggle to answer like a question where it just says, what's your gender, and it just gives man, woman.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who are going to look at a study that's asking for women and it's about like the menstrual cycle, and if they don't identify as a woman but they have a menstrual cycle, they're going to be the ones who are going to think hard about whether they are going to join that study or not.
I see.
So that's the reason I'm focusing there, because I just don't think, and at least like this has been my experience interacting with people until, you know, we get into a deeper conversation, is people who are like cisgender or identify as the sex that they were assigned at birth, they don't tend to think about it all that much. Like, it's just kind of like you see the question and you check the box and you don't really think much further.
Mm.
I don't necessarily think that it doesn't mean that these differences don't affect them and that we shouldn't do a better job measuring, because, like I said, it does serve everybody, because no man and no woman is exactly the same as every other man and every other woman. Like, they're categories of convenience. Like if you think about, like, someone who's had, like, a hysterectomy, so they no longer have their uterus.
Mm.
So now they're different from other, like, people who are assumed as female.
Mm.
Like I was mentioning with menopause, different hormone levels from most people who are female.
Mm.
So there's so many other factors and layers that go into even just sex, which is the more medical side of things.
Mm.
Like, and then gender is a whole nother thing.
Mm.
So I just don't think that people who aren't maybe members of the gender and sex diverse community notice those things that much, but I don't think that means it doesn't also apply to them.
Yeah, I realized one thing from what you just said is that to start to understand or want to understand, hey, what this, whatever things, right, alcohol or drug use, how it affects our body in terms of my gender,
mm-hmm.
before that steps, I need to confirm that what is my identity, right? Because
yeah.
a lot of us don't think about it.
No.
And a lot of people who are in the transgender community, they probably went through something to make them started to really recognize these topics that's worth to consider,
yeah.
right? So that is like actually a few steps away from being aware of it.
Yes. Yeah. Like there's just a lot more thought that I think goes into it. Like obviously I don't go around like every day just like constantly thinking about my identity, but yeah. it happens pretty often that I'm presented with a situation where I have to think about it, or I have to do something with it one way or the other. Like, I mean, like, and this happens especially for me because I have X as like my sex marker on most of my identification. So
what does that mean?
So like typically on like I have VC like identity cards and all that kind of stuff now, mm-hmm. like driver's license, whatnot. So you can have like your sex marker as male, so like M, female, F, or X is the other option, which right. is like unknown, one or like not either. It's kind of just like an open third option.
Mm-hmm.
But because I have that, I run into a lot of situations where like a system isn't updated, so it only has male, female.
Right.
And I'm like, well, that's not like my legal identification mm-hmm. says X, but they're like, you got to kind of choose one for whatever system we're using.
Yeah. Now, what would you go with then?
It kind of depends on what it is. For me, if it's like healthcare related stuff, I usually go with female just based off of like most of the characteristics I have. That mm-hmm. said, that's not entirely accurate.
Right.
Especially, well, this wouldn't be the case for every trans or non-binary person, but for me, because I've like taken testosterone, I've had surgery, like my body is very much in an in-between space,
mm-hmm.
and that makes it really difficult to neatly fit into one box or the other without a lot of explanation to whoever I'm like talking to. Yeah, and same thing goes with like it happens when I'm dealing with banks, when I'm dealing with credit mm-hmm. unions. Like it comes up a lot, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So it is something that we just think about, I think, a lot more. But that does come with the strength that I was more perceptive maybe at noticing a larger issue. And being motivated to do something about it.
Yeah, I feel like you are in the scientific area where you're trying to kind of contribute your knowledge into this field to help people who have the same kind of confusion mm-hmm. or difficulties in their lives to be able to have an easier life or the life that benefits their conditions more, which is yeah. great, but not everyone has that benefits or knowledge or privilege to kind of have those kind of profession. I mean, probably they are encountering a lot of
there's a lot of barriers that come up.
Right.
Like I'm really lucky. Like I have an immense amount of privilege, like being able to move away to go to school,
yeah.
like being born and raised in Canada. Like I do have a lot of other privilege working in my favor. So
yeah.
for me, it's a matter of like using that to help like a much broader group of people who are not always as lucky as I've been, and don't always have the freedom that I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like not many people get to go and like do education beyond a bachelor's degree, right?
Yeah.
So it's making like the most of that.
Yeah, I feel like if you could share a little bit, not necessarily have to be your personal mm-hmm. experience, but also could be some other people that you associate with that identity them the same. Like what kind of experience make them start to think about what is my identity?
Ooh, okay.
And then it just kind of like got kicked, right? And
right, yeah.
And also sometimes we probably just think about it and we forget about it. A
yeah.
lot of problem or a lot of questions that come to our mind and it doesn't stick with us, right?
Yeah.
Then we probably think about the same kind of questions or confusion for many, many times. And also this is a big decision. So for people, they don't have enough information
yeah.
for them to like make that judgment or make that decision. So what are the signals? What are the information that they picked up to help you or them that you know
yeah.
To feel like, oh, I need to make a decision to move further. And this
right,
is a huge
yeah.
challenge and I'm willing to deal with that.
Right, yeah. I mean, I'll mostly just speak from my own experience.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, everyone is really, really different
right.
In how they go about like whatever it is that they're figuring out about themselves, gender, sexuality,
mm-hmm.
any of that. For me, I didn't like come out and transition until I was 21. Mm-hmm. I'm 24 now. But like there was a lot of like lead up to that point and like times that I like knew and stuff. So honestly, like, and this sounds, it doesn't maybe sound good or bad, but I learned a lot from being online because I didn't have a lot of people around me who right. were queer or trans, especially growing up in, so Alberta, for people who maybe are less familiar with the way Alberta is, it's kind of a more conservative area of okay. Canada. It's, yeah, like governmentally is very much more conservative, mm-hmm. even in the big cities, because I was from a larger city, the largest city in Alberta, right. Which is Calgary. It's just a lot more conservative. There's a lot less openness about that kind of stuff. And that's like compounded greatly if you're anywhere outside of those major cities.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically, the only way I was going to figure that stuff out, like I didn't have queer family members. I didn't have like any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like online. So like I remember being 13 and just kind of like coming across basically just like people just like out and living their lives mm-hmm. online or whatever, like on Instagram, on YouTube, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that kind of just like made me think, because I just didn't realize that like it, you didn't have to like for in my case, like I didn't have to be a woman. Like I just thought that was
choices.
Like, yeah. I just thought that was like how it didn't occur to me that I had another option, basically.
Right. It's very interesting because for me, I didn't grow up with that many information.
Yeah.
So I felt like